Good afternoon, and welcome to Ask the Mayor. I'm WFIU Interim News Director Adam Ragusa, and we're blessed, as always, to have Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan in the studio with us today.
What a way to start the new year.
Indeed. We've also – another way to start the new year is that in addition to phoning us to join the conversation, as you were encouraged to do at local call 855-0811 or toll-free 877-285-9348 or emailing us at mayor@indiana.edu. You can now instant message us or instant message me more specifically right here at WFIU Mayor. That's one word, WFIU Mayor. That's my instant message screen name for this show. I realized that had we implemented this in 1998, we would have looked really cool. In 2008, we just kind of look a little desperate, but there it is, and it's just another way for you to get in touch with us. And obviously, I want to remind our listeners that we do consider this show a public service, and we really encourage everyone to phone in with their questions and comments about city issues in the case of today in the city of Bloomington.
Or to instant message in.
Or to instant message in, absolutely. All right, Mr. Mayor, so what should we start with?
Happy New Year to you and to your listeners.
Absolutely. Let's talk about something that happened yesterday. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jill Long Thompson was in town, made a campaign stop, and ruffled some feathers when she came out unambiguously in support of New Terrain I-69. Is that a deal breaker for you? Would you consider rescinding your endorsement of her?
No, no.
Okay.
It's interesting to me that that becomes the story when she, you know, that, and I understand that, but it's too bad that, that to me is what we end up doing on a lot of issues is focus in on something like that, that when there's the economy, the property tax issue, and the health care proposals that she's making, that not just she's making, but her opponent in the Democratic primary and that Mitch Daniels and his State of the State address last night are making. And I understand it's newsworthy. I understand the interest, but it's not going to be the number one issue on anybody's agenda. There's going to be a whole lot of other things that are going to make a difference statewide. And so, no, I wouldn't rescind my endorsement of her. I think she's the right person for the job, and I'm proud to support her.
855-0811.
That doesn't mean.
Uh-oh.
That doesn't mean.
Can I read the other one really quickly?
Absolutely.
877-285-9348.
It doesn't mean. I'm sorry about that. It doesn't mean that I agree with her on the issue. And it doesn't mean that you don't try to persuade your candidate that there might be a better solution to the issue and that there might be other ways to achieve the same goals that she believes she's trying to state. What I did admire was her directness in the face of opposition was to say, look, I don't want to give a half answer and make it sound like I kind of agree with you. She stated her opinion point blank. And I think we're starting to see some of the presidential candidates earn at least support, if not votes, for taking that upfront approach that I disagree with her. My guess is that the two candidates in the primary on the Democratic side and the one candidate on the Republican side, they'll all have the same position on that issue anyway. So I'm interested in the overall picture and not a litmus test.
Well, speaking of this, did you catch the big speech last night?
I did. And I tell you, I started to feel nervous for him when – I don't know at what minute mark it was when his teleprompters went out. Mm. But all of a sudden to have rehearsed and rehearsed – I've seen governors in the past practice that and it's a little bit odd to speak with a teleprompter to begin with and then to have to default back to your written notes for the remainder of your talk. I admired his ability to do it so just in the delivery, I admired it.
Well, those of us in radio land were less perturbed by that.
Good point. Good point. Good point. He didn't – I don't think he surprised anybody. The only – you know, he – it's interesting because I think he used the word brave or bravery something like seven times in 30 minutes had Otis Bowen's presence there be – in fact, he literally talked about a present for Otis Bowen's 90th birthday would be to try to do something comprehensive on property tax reform. Again, I have to admire the fact that he's – that he, the governor, has not gone for what I think would be the easy political gain on property taxes, and that is just to call for repeal. Repeal won't happen. I don't think it can happen. I don't think it would be a responsible thing to have happen. But that doesn't mean there aren't people calling for it. He has told the people who are for a full repeal that he believes their heart is in the right place, but that it's not the responsible thing to do for the state. What he is looking for is some pretty significant property tax reduction. How all that will be achieved, I think he has taken income tax increase off the table. Mm-hmm. I'm almost certain of that. And then he's left shifting different expenses from local to state government and capping ways in which local government can spend its money. Some of it's that government reform, which I don't think will save a lot of money.
Yeah, those two proposals have been a bit conflated, I feel like.
Yeah, I do too. The one that probably pays for what he's trying to do is his sales tax increase. And whether or not that would expand to services or exempt some services such as medical, I don't know yet. And that'll be, to me, what this legislative session will be about. I did like the line about not going to buy non-refundable tickets for spring break because we're going to be here. And that's throwing down the gauntlet. I mean, that only a governor – it's a really interesting setup in our Constitution. Only a governor can call a special session. The legislature cannot call itself back into session. Only a legislature can adjourn a session. And it has literally happened before where I believe it was Evan Bayh called a legislature into session. That's when I was there, and we adjourned immediately. And he had to call us back in, and it was a little power struggle, and it was symbolically important to show the governor that, look, we're going to set the agenda too. I think this governor would call a special session if he felt there wasn't anything done. This is someone who has not been shy to, popular or not, stick to his guns on issues. I mean, I would never have predicted we would have daylight savings time. Mm-hmm. I would have bet anything against him being able to get that done. He got it done. It was at the expense of the majority in the House. He had legislators in his own party who lost their election on that issue. So he's not I don't think he's much on brinksmanship. I think he's willing to go over the brink. And I hope that gets the legislature's attention.
Well, if you're listening and you want to talk about parliamentary tactics in the state legislature, if you want to talk about snow removal or anything else, we do encourage you to give us a call, 855-0811, 877-285-9348. Email us at mayor@indiana.edu or instant message me at WFIU Mayor. That's one word, WFIU Mayor. And we're speaking with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. I'd like to talk about the brewing brouhaha over this proposed Crestline Communities development mm-hmm. in the northwest corner of the city, a 45-unit single-family subdivision. It's this corner of West 17th and North Crescent Road. Now a lawsuit on the table with a newly formed neighborhood organization saying that it's going to stress traffic in their area and also pointing at flaws that they felt occurred in the process by which it was approved by the Plan Commission. I won't pretend that I really even understood what happened at that Plan Commission meeting, but it did seem that the process seemed to underscore the toothlessness of Plan Commissions in the state of Indiana, that ultimately if a petition conforms with the relevant ordinances and statutes, there's really nothing they can do to exercise their own judgment in terms of whether or not they feel a particular development is in the best interest of the community. Would you agree with that assessment?
No, not entirely. I think there's a limit as to what Plan Commissions can do, and that gives predictability. And I mean, otherwise, I suppose if you go to the other extreme, how would is the Plan Commission the panel non-elected officials appointed by elected officials, but they are not appointed themselves? Do you want them having the ultimate authority? And I'll say that this Plan Commission has done its job and has also been sued for having exerted itself, mm-hmm. and that was at the old Stevens Olds Honda
11th
site.
Street, yeah.
So you can get sued when someone will say you've exceeded your authority, and then at the same time you can get sued because people are saying you aren't exercising your full authority. you know, I have a lot more confidence that this most recent lawsuit will be dismissed on its face. But I'm not an attorney. Well, I'm
you're an attorney.
I'm an attorney by on TV, as they say. I play one on TV. The real attorneys who work for the city tell me that they're pretty confident that we'll be successful. But that to me isn't the big success. It's still unfortunate that you've got any neighbors or neighborhood that feel imposed upon. And we continue working with Councilmember Chris Sturbaum and looking at some solutions to the problem.
It's in his district,
despite the lawsuit.
Okay. You know.
And then Brad Whistler had represented that area, I think, before redistricting or something like that, and or had lived there himself or something. He has a connection to that and has been working with the neighbors on that as well.
I want to come back to this, but we've got some folks waiting patiently on the
sure.
phone. Nita, you're on the air with the mayor.
Hi.
Hi.
Mayor Kurzan, your recommendation about the post office I think is excellent, and I would like to know what can we as citizens of Bloomington do to support that effort, because it's just totally what we need.
Well, let's back up and explain the development that occurred here.
Sure. The as we all know, the Postal Service is going to be closing its current facility in March of 2009, although I don't think it will actually close at that date. But once it does close, the decision has to be made whether the Postal Service relocates entirely out of downtown. Part of that fear that will happen is based on a concern that they need too much acreage to be able to fit in the downtown to put both a processing facility and a retail facility. And so they put out they took in offers. All the offers that have come back in really aren't in the exact areas we would like downtown, or they're downtown and they're too small. So what we've done is ask that the Postal Service go back to the drawing board, look at the potential for a retail site, which would take about 1.1 acre in the downtown area and have the processing facility someplace else, preferably west of town. And they have expressed an openness in considering that request. They didn't say no outright. There really is no public comment period at this point in terms of a deadline. They're taking public comment, and I think that will continue. They'll probably start the process over again. And so, Nita, to answer your question specifically, and I don't have it in front of me, but we can get that posted up on our website. I think it's already there. Is a man named Richard Drury, D-R-U-R-Y, with the Postal Service. And I'm hoping someone listening at the city can text me his address or email address. But if you go just to the city's website, you can either email me at mayor@bloomington.in.gov with a letter or email, and we'll make sure that it gets to him. He's the real estate agent for the Postal Service based out of, I think, of all places, Texas.
I've got that address if you'd like.
Great, please.
Okay, Richard E. Drury, Drury Real Estate Services, 912 Hunters Creek Drive, DeSoto, Texas, 75115-4711. And you can also email at richard_drury@sbcglobal.net.
And we'll get that up on our economic development department website if it's not already up there. My guess is it is, and I know the HT has included it, and it's posted on their site as well.
All right. So, but there's also another thing that Nita can do to voice her support is to show up to the city council meeting tonight, correct?
Absolutely. I'm embarrassed I didn't think of that. Yes, tonight the city council will be considering a resolution on this very topic, and will be also encouraging the Postal Service to consider splitting the services so that the retail will remain in the downtown and the processing facility can go out west. The whole idea being for all of us that the retail is important, I think, one, to the character of the downtown, but also for small businesses, all the residents. There's a huge influx of residences now in the downtown area, and so many small businesses depend on those P.O. boxes and the ability to deliver mail or packages from the downtown. We're trying to cut down on the need for people to have to drive out to the far west or far east of town, or even the southwest is another area that the Postal Service had considered at one point. So we want to keep that as a part of the downtown community.
Thank you so much for the call, Nita. We also
Thank
have
you.
Mary on the line. Mary? Mary, are you with us?
Yes. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Mayor, in driving around town, especially on Sarah Road, I've noticed that there right now is I guess, traffic can get into Renwick, construction traffic. And
right.
Is that going to be a permanent opening in and out of Renwick onto Thayer Road?
And again, I'm going to ask if somebody at the city who's listening can text message the answer. I know right where you're talking about Thayer Road where the construction traffic goes in. I believe that was intended to stay, but I need to get that. I know that we have the answer to that. I just don't know it off the top of my head and don't want to give it to you incorrectly.
Well, the only thing I'm worried about is will left turns be allowed out of Renwick and into Renwick from coming from?
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, that would cause a traffic.
Yes, so. So someone at the city listening here can check with planning to find out, or with Justin Wyckoff, our engineer. I know that that was part of the plan was discussed, and part of the approved plan. We'll note that for anyone who's not been able to picture that. You've got Thayer Road running to the north and south, and Renwick to the west of Thayer, and right now construction traffic can enter. They had almost the two hills that were built out of the construction dirt, and the question is whether or not that street will remain open after. I think it was intended to stay, and the left turns, I understand, is it's almost a blind, not really a blind curve, but it's pretty close to being a blind curve
right.
in that area. So let's find out. I will get an answer, I hope, by the end of this half hour.
That would be great because I can just see the
and if not,
accidents happening and
if
left
not,
and right.
Please feel free to call my office, 349-3406, or again, mayor@bloomington.in.gov, and we'll get you at least an answer, if not all of your listeners here.
Thanks for the question, Mary. We also have another question here about Thayer Road. It's an email. It says, I've heard that a roundabout is planned for Thayer Road and Rogers Road. How are you going to fit that into the space? It looks quite small.
Yeah, there is discussion of that, and that's, and I think, an intersection that's desperately in need of help. Obviously, we wouldn't be able to do it without without the engineering saying that it was possible to do. And we're pretty happy with the results of the roundabouts. I know that some people like them more than others, and they are different types, different sizes. So you have to acquire land sometimes in the surrounding area to make it work. But any of that kind of planning is done publicly. There'll be discussion of it. In fact, I'll mention it coming up. At our State of the City address, that particular intersection. But I don't know enough about the square footage there that's available, but certainly it wouldn't be done without that having been studied.
We're speaking to Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan here on WFIU's Ask the Mayor. You can call us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. You can email at mayor@indiana.edu, and you can instant message to WFIU Mayor. That's just one word. And we have DJ waiting patiently on the line. DJ?
Hi. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Just wanted to ask the mayor how we can convince him to get a more sustainable position on using salt on the roads. Major northern cities like Madison, Wisconsin are reevaluating their position because of the salt getting in drinking water and causing hypertension, the corrosion of roads, bridges, and parking, which increases the budget, the inhibition of seed germination for wildflowers, the erosion of soil fertility, contamination of drinking water, it compromises health in birds, and it releases toxic chemicals. It also affects our clothing, cars, floors, and shoes. And I'm wondering what we can do to reduce it. Some cities are just using it on a main artery zone only, and near schools and hospitals and dangerous curves. And I wondered what we can do to reduce this corrosive nature of it and get a more sustainable approach. And the biggest reason is everybody in town has a SUV. You don't even need to salt the streets. They want to use their four-wheel drive big SUVs to show that they don't need.
And if they keep driving them, then they'll climate change will happen, and we won't have to worry about any of this.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the
nice
question.
Touch.
Thank you,
Mr.
Mayor.
Don't even need salt.
What's the mix that goes on the roads now?
Let me say, of course, an SUV won't help on ice, and four-wheel drive doesn't help you on ice. So, and it's. The mix right now, we had gone 4 years ago, the city was using sand, and we changed it and went to salt, then went to what's considered to be more environmentally friendly salt that was molasses treated, and now we've gone to yet another salt that we hope is even more environmentally friendly. I don't think there's anything that's truly environmentally friendly out there. Sand even helps corrode the road. It was very unsafe in terms of even after snows, and I mean into months after, up through June. This city was paying to sweep the streets, and you had cars, bicyclists, pedestrians having to have the sandstorms and the slick roads from the sand going into months after winter until we got it all cleaned up. So I think we're pretty committed to sticking with salt, although it's a lot more expensive to use because it's added to the safety of the road. I mean, our police and fire, the ambulance service has all commented to our street department how much safer the roads are now. What we are doing that I don't think really meets the caller's concern the way I'd wish that we could, but what we are doing is upgrading all of our trucks so that the spreaders are distributing that salt a lot more efficiently. We do pre-treat, so it's a lot more visible than it has been in the past. In the past, we were putting the salt down or the sand after the snow had already started. When I came into office, we talked with the drivers. They said it would be a lot more effective to pre-treat. It has been. But you also see it on the street a lot more visibly than you would have in the past. And it lasts for quite a while that way, and it's still effective for a couple of snows. They do definitely distribute it, as you talked about, as a caller talked about, at dangerous curves or at intersections, you'll always see it be a little bit higher. There's some parts of town, though, where you're going to see, the street department would tell you it's excessive salt. That's because those trucks don't have those more modern spreaders yet. And as we upgrade that fleet, I think you'll start to see a lot better and more efficient distribution, and which will save us money and be more environmentally friendly. But it's a problem either way in terms of what you distribute. Some cities have gone to a liquid as well.
When there's a first hint of a little bit of snow, these trucks are out, and then the next day everything warms up and it's gone. So is it possible to get a little bit of timing, like when you get a 5-day forecast of below freezing weather, then maybe put them out rather than like 50 degrees the next day, and then it all melts and you've kind of done it for nothing?
Well, I guess I am kind of picking out one example. There has been one example of a fatality where that was kind of a concern, was as you may recall, on Pete Ellis Drive. And so it's a judgment call, and I think you're right. And I can tell you that even if it's not for the environment, it's out of a pocketbook concern that we try to be careful about when it goes out. But I think it's a very legitimate question. Can I real quickly jump to a different topic?
Absolutely.
I don't mean to cut off this
caller. Thanks for the call, DJ, by the way.
That is a permanent entrance at SARE that was approved by the Plan Commission. The idea is to take pressure off of the other intersection at the roundabout on the other side of Renwick. But I think the caller has a very valid concern I want to check into, is the left turns out of each.
Look at us using technology here.
I know.
We've brought this
very
show into
impressive.
The late 20th century. Yeah. let's get back. We've only got to about 5 more minutes with the mayor today. I just want to get back very briefly to Crestline Communities. It seems that the chief neighborhood concern about—
I'm going to say one more thing that I had so many calls on that I thought I'd mention it listeners, and that is very quickly on this whole road thing, is that leaf collection does continue for those who've called and are concerned that now that winter is here and we've had snows, that no more—our leaves are still outside. The leaves are still going to be picked up. And that should be – we're on schedule now back after the snows, and we should be done in about 2 to 3 weeks on leaf collection. I apologize. Back on
– No problem. Absolutely. The chief neighborhood complaint seems to be that it's going to be putting traffic pressure on it, what's already kind of a perilous intersection up there. And it's reignited some interest that I've seen in people talking about an adequate public facilities ordinance. Mm-hmm. Could you explain what that is?
It's probably too late in terms of this particular development.
Sure.
Some people, I think, even refer to it as there was state legislation on impact fees. Some people will refer to I can't think of the word it'll come to me as we're talking here. Making sure that development doesn't outpace the ability of government to provide the infrastructure necessary to support it. And who's going to pay for that? Is it developers' responsibility since they're putting the increased pressure on the public facilities, or is it always the public that's expected to do the infrastructure.
It would give local government the authority to delay a development in order to make the necessary increases to public infrastructure.
Pacing of development and clearly this is an area where that road and all those roads, and that's what I think one of the most, it's maybe not the, but it's one of the most dangerous intersections is from my layperson perspective. Is the area that they're concerned about. I also want to make sure people realize that what this project is in and of itself is an affordable housing project, something the community that almost never makes this discussion is this is a true affordable housing project that was why the Plan Commission felt so strongly that it was a good development.
Yeah, and obviously there was a pretty strong near public consensus expressed over the course of the election from my perception of people just saying that we need a lot of public housing. And I don't want to accuse the folks in the neighborhood of NIMBY.
No.
I think they have a legitimate worry about the traffic in that intersection.
Absolutely. And this all is even impacted by not just that development, but any other future developments to come. And I think that goes to your question, Adam, in terms of how are we going to keep pace with development. And that's true all over the city. I mean, I think there's the caller talking about what's happening at Sarah Road, the caller talking about the roundabout. You look at Sarah and Rogers, and that is a dangerous intersection. And it's not kept pace with the growth that's occurred out there. We've got fire station needs that have not yet been met as we see the population shifting, especially to the southeast, and a lot more coming. That's the whole debate and how we should plan for that future. And I think that's to kind of tie this all up, it also goes into what the Plan Commission's authority is or should be.
Nicely done. Let's see. We've got a couple of more minutes left with the mayor. State of the City coming up on the 24th, correct?
Yes. And I invite everyone to attend January 24th at 5:30 p.m. in the City Council chambers, open to the public. And I want to do talk about some of the topics we're talking about here today, give a status report on the major issues in the community right now. But I also want to focus on some of the basics, the things that we're doing in terms of all of our public infrastructure, things that don't maybe make the big topics of the day and the headlines du jour, but are important for the future of the city. And then make a few announcements that things are significant goals for 2008.
You gave a little bit of a preview of it at your inauguration and mentioned that there would be some classic liberalism as well as some conservatism, a word that you had so much trouble saying that it tripped on the way
out. It doesn't flow naturally.
Could you give us a little bit of preview along the latter side of that equation? What are you going to talk about that's conservative?
Well, I think it's mostly use of taxpayer money and trying to make the most out of any given dollar that – we are actually looking within our city government structure. We formed a management team, and we're looking at some best management practices. Maria Heslin, the new deputy mayor for the city, is leading the team to start looking into just the overall management of our office and of the city government as a whole. We're making sure that we have buy-in from all of our department heads. We're working with a local business person. Tom Hirons has kind of been a champion for some of this. It's worked up in Fort Wayne. It's to make sure it's not so much a political triteness of we're out to cut taxes. What I want to do is make sure we're using any given tax dollar most effectively, that we can stretch our dollar. And there's a great example, the caller talking about the use of salt. It's not so much about how much the salt is. It's how far that salt can go. So overall, we want to talk about the efficiency in government.
I want to thank all of our callers. We're going to have to leave it there, our callers and our emails. This has been Ask the Mayor with Bloomington Mayor Mark Kruzan. I'm Adam Ragusea. Join us again next Wednesday. Kokomo's new mayor, Greg Goodnight, will be making his first appearance on the show. I'm Adam Ragusea for producer Colin Bishop and engineer Mike Paskash. Thanks for listening as always.